You are listening to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time on SQPN.com, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way. This episode is brought to you by Bluehost. Create your own website or blog with a .com domain name for just $6.95 per month. Go to onceuponatime.sqpn.com and click on the Bluehost banner to sign up or to find more information. And by the Amazon Store. Shop at Amazon by clicking on our Amazon link at sqpn.com, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our weekly podcast dedicated to the ABC show about fairy tales and the real world and whatever happens in between those worlds. And today we will discuss the episode, 715, that was the title. A strange title that only becomes clear towards, actually in the episode itself. Then you understand why they called it like that. To talk with me about the show and about your comments also on this episode, I have no less than three co-hosts. First of all, ladies first, Deborah. Welcome to the show, Deborah.
Hello.
Also joining us, Lisa Jones.
Hi, Father.
Hello. And David, finally, is our other valiant prince who is joining the episode. How's life?
Valiant.
Valiant. Very good, because we had lots of prince and princesses in this episode. As usual, we're going to give you a short recap of the show and then talk about the themes and the symbolism and also a little bit of the background information that might enhance our enjoyment of this episode. We'll look at the original fairy tales, at certain recurring themes about the choices that the characters make in the story, and hopefully that will inspire you to perhaps rewatch the episode or look at this series with different eyes, because I think this is just one of these TV series where there's a lot going on, and including a lot of things that you don't notice on first viewing, and so most of us usually go back and rewatch the episode a second time. Not me, because I kind of ran out of time, so I've just finished watching it, so I'm still very fresh off this last episode, but I took some notes, and I'm sure that there's plenty to talk about. Let's go ahead and start with our first recap of the episode. Hold on. There's a jingle first.
The reason we all know them, they're a way for us to deal with our world. Well, it doesn't always make sense. Believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Lisa, help us make sense of our world by telling us what happened in this story.
Well, we'll start with fairy tale world. And we saw the wedding is approaching. It's about, this episode was about Snow White and Prince James, or Prince Charming, as Snow calls him. And we saw Snow White out, and she is friends with Red, evidently, from Red Riding Hood. And she is upset about the wedding coming, and Red sends her off to see Rumpelstiltskin. And this is the first time that we see that Snow goes and meets Rumpelstiltskin. And she meets with him to get a potion to help her forget her love, that she has a broken heart. And we see Prince Charming and King, I can't remember his pseudo-father's name, see them exchange words.
Whatever.
King, what was it? King
Jerk?
Philip?
I don't know. King
Jerk. Was it King George, perhaps?
George?
I think it is George, yeah.
I think so. So we see them exchange words and how the prince not only needs to marry, I can't think of her name, Abigail, but he also needs to give her his heart, but he's in love with somebody else. So the king tells him to get over it. And Prince sends Snow a letter by Dove to come meet him before the wedding, and they can be together forever. Otherwise, he'll know she doesn't love him, and he'll get married. So Snow gets the letter by Dove before she takes the potion, right before, and she goes, of course, to the castle. When she gets to the castle, she is caught and thrown in prison, and she meets Grumpy. She finally meets one of the dwarves, and one of the other dwarves comes up after they share a little story about love and heartbreak. A new dwarf comes up named Stealthy and springs them out of jail They get caught leaving. Stealthy is unfortunately killed. Snow saves Grumpy. They meet the king. The king tells her she has to break the prince's heart and leave, or he will kill the prince. So she is a wonderful liar, and she goes to the prince and breaks his heart and leaves him in tears, says she never loved him, that he needs to get over her. The dwarves find her, thankfully, and tell her that the pain is who she is and that she needs to basically accept it, and keeps her from taking the potion. The prince comes looking for her, is when we see him next, and Red says that she's gone, and then we see Grumpy running in and tell Snow White that the wedding is off, and we find out that she's taken the potion, and she has no memory of the prince at all. And that's how it ends in fairy tale world. In real world, I know everyone wants to hear about the stranger, and we don't find out much. We see Henry talking to the stranger, which doesn't really reveal much. Regina tells Emma to talk to the stranger and find out something about him. She talks to the stranger. We still don't find out much. He opens the box. It's a typewriter. But that's about the extent of his revelation. Basically, Mary Margaret, we find out the 7:15 episode name is because that's when she goes to get coffee every morning to run into David. Emma talks to her, and they discuss how she's in love, and she can't get him out of her head, and she knows it's wrong. Mary Margaret bumps into Catherine at the pharmacy and sees she has a pregnancy test. And so she's distraught, walks in the woods, finds a dove. She takes it to the vet, which happens to be at the animal shelter where David works. She wants to release it. There's a storm coming. She falls trying to release the dove, and David saves her. And they go off into take refuge in a cabin because the storm is so bad. While they're in the cabin, they reveal their feelings for each other, how they're both coming to get coffee. They both want to see each other. They both can't get each other out of their head, and they love each other. And they're about to kiss, and I think the weather stopped or something. Also, Mary Margaret tells them about the pregnancy test. And
actually, I think it's Mary Margaret who just stops and says,
"Oh, she stops.
How can you do this?
How can you do this?
How can you do this?
That's right.
Your wife is pregnant or could be pregnant."
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, sanity rears its ugly head. So they almost kiss. They don't. They discuss the pregnancy test and his marriage. And then they go release the dove and decide it's too painful to see each other. Catherine and David have this big discussion about she's not pregnant, but she wants it to work. They should go see Dr. Hopper for counseling. He agrees. And then the next morning, you see him and Mary Margaret both avoiding the coffee shop at 7:15. But of course, they still run into each other, only at 7:45. Mm-hmm. And they decide that she follows him out of the coffee shop, running after him. They decide it's meant to be, and they kiss. And of course, Regina is watching. And that's where we're left for the episode.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That's a very good recap. Very concise. I always admire how you can separate the storyline of the fairy tale world and the real world storybook storyline. Because there are two parallel stories, but they're very kind of interwoven. But
in this one, they're very almost opposite.
Yes, you know, they
going
are.
They're like the episode.
Mirror stories, and also mirror characters. Some characters like Little Red Riding Hood. She's not that little though. She's kind of the opposite character of who she is in Storybrooke. I love that of this episode. Well, before we delve into our analysis of the episode, let me, just like last week, let me do the rounds and ask you, this time, not just what was the element you liked most about the episode, but is there perhaps also something you disliked about the episode? David, let me start with you.
Well, I'm already a fan of the background they do of the, you know, the Once Upon a Time world where they actually covered what makes Grumpy grumpy. I mean... They cover the characters a little bit more in depth and not just Snow White and the Prince.
Mm-hmm.
Gives it a lot more substance. Okay, and now this is why she went with the dwarves.
Yes.
As far as what I didn't like, it just at the very end, it just kind of I just almost got whiplash there because they have all this pent-up angst. Okay, all right, we can't see each other. This is too painful. Okay, never mind. Let's just kiss.
Yes, I agree. That's the part I didn't like either.
Go ahead, Deborah. You didn't
that
either.
I had to butt in there because it's the same thing I dislike too, is that I understand love is a very complex and, you know, and fascinating thing, but to, you know, it seems like it's, you know, common sense on TV to throw love in place of morality, and like, really, are they really doing the right thing? I don't know. That doesn't feel very right to me. So
we definitely have to have a debate about that later on in the show, because there might be attenuating circumstances. But
yes,
what did you like about the episode?
What I liked, and this is just kind of one of those little tiny moments, is when Regina walks up to Emma and says, you know, you need to figure out who the stranger is. And Emma says something to the effect of, he must be one of the millions you cursed.
Yes.
And Regina's eyes get huge, like, you know about that? So I thought that was really kind of one of those cute little moments where it's like Regina thought for a second she was figured out.
Her heart stopped.
Yeah, she's like, no. So I kind of liked that. There was a couple other things in there I liked, but that was my episode, or the part of the episode that I was like, ha-ha.
Lisa, what was your most favorite and least favorite moment?
I'm just a romantic at heart. So, of course, I love all of the conflicted love story. I'm a sucker for that. But I have to say one of my favorite moments of the show was the stranger talking to Emma at the granny's, whatever the diner's called. And they were sitting there, and he was giving this speech about the box and how much she'd want him to open the box and tell her what's in it. And he wasn't going to do it because he was going to keep her guessing and wondering. And he went on this whole big thing, and you're thinking, that's what this show is about. It's just about to keep us guessing and wondering and twisted, and we're just all anguishing, and you're not going to tell us. You know? And then he opens the box.
Yeah.
The typewriter, which answers nothing. And I just thought, wow, that's really reflective about what the writers are doing to us. You know?
Good point. And almost, if I may add, a bit symbolic of the other story thread of this impossible love. And then, you know, there's this constant tension. Is this going to work? This is not going to work. It might work. It could work. No, it can't work. And then they kiss and it's like, oh, the story was actually much more interesting in the whole kind of when it was still in this tension.
Right.
And with a typewriter, same thing. As long as you don't know what's in that box, it's an amazing box. And the moment they show you, it's a typewriter.
Never mind.
It's a typewriter. Just move along. Be gone with you.
Now, if it turns out to be a typewriter, go ahead.
Okay.
I was just saying, now if it turns out to be a typewriter where every time he writes something it comes true, that would be
awesome. Well, I was about to say there might be more to this typewriter.
There usually is, right?
Yes.
Well, then I started, you know, and this is, I'm sure everybody else was like, what fairy tale character uses a typewriter? And I spent like 3 hours trying to figure that
out. No way. You were actually looking for typewriter fairy tales?
Or somebody who's a writer in a fairy tale? Or, you know what?
It's too funny.
I saw that mentioned online that people were scouring, and I didn't have time to look.
Really?
I thought about it.
Oh, my gosh. My first initial reaction was, well, of course, this is not a fairy tale character because this is someone from outside of Storybrooke. So it's, you know, almost by definition, he's not part of the story. And he's like almost above the story. I mean, a writer. All these fairy tales have been written. And so they have authors. So this is probably someone who is going to change the course of the story as a writer. He's going to add elements. He's going to influence the story. But he's almost like, well, I don't know, perhaps a character that might have the archetype of the creator, the Wizard of Oz, the man behind the curtain, or, you know, he might be the author of this strange storybook, because we all know that the storybook that Henry has is not a traditional storybook. So perhaps he's the author. Who knows? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, you know, this is certainly not a fairy tale character, but I might be wrong.
No, and that's the can we talk about what the speculation is of who he is?
Sure, yes.
Since we're already there.
Well, Lisa, did you tell us your least favorite thing? Or?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, my least favorite thing, I would agree, was the kiss.
Oh,
I mean,
also
as exciting
kiss.
As it is, at the same time, I don't know. You know,
okay.
A, I'm thinking, not yet. uh-huh. you know, for their relationship, because I need a little more angst, you know. And then also, he's married, and he just had that conversation with her, and the morality of it bothered me. So I yeah.
Okay, very good. All right, let's speculate. So who is this stranger? We have some indication. Well, some indications. I'm freeze framing this episode constantly to try to find something that might give us a clue. But there's actually not much. I mean, he's got a motorcycle. I tried to decipher his license plate. I think it says something like HR23, and then I think it says Kansas. But I'm not certain. Well, yeah, I thought it was interesting because of
a little Wizard of Oz nod.
Well, yeah. Okay, let me just briefly mention this Wizard of Oz theory that I have. I mean, in this episode, so the license plate is Kansas. He's a writer, so he's an author. He's kind of the man behind the scenes, if he's indeed the writer of this fairy tale book or this particular version. So that could be interesting. But this takes place in the middle of what it's a storm is coming. He's actually the one who warns them, and my initial reaction, storm, I think Wizard of Oz. And I'm not sure if this was on purpose or if I'm seeing things or projecting this, because the Wizard of Oz was one of my favorite stories when I was a kid. But also in the beginning, right after this mention of this storm, we see the scene with Mary Margaret reading Jules Verne in mm-hmm. the coffee shop, and then comes in Prince Charming. And Jules Verne, I mean, I was trying to see if there is this particular story, but I think it's just a collection of stories.
Actually, can I interrupt
yeah,
you
go ahead.
And point out a Disney reference?
Oh, go ahead.
Jules Verne was Walt Disney's favorite author, and that's why 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was made the movie.
Interesting.
And there's another Jules Verne one. I'm trying to think of what it was But Walt Disney himself loved Jules Verne and did a lot of homage to Jules Verne.
Very cool. Well, he is definitely considered to be almost like a slightly more modern fairy tale writer.
Did you catch the title of the book? Just out of curiosity.
I didn't see it.
It's The Mysterious Island.
Wow.
That could be a lost reference.
A lost reference. You're right. I was trying to look at the title, but I couldn't find it. The Mysterious Island. Now, we need to Google that to see if there's another hint in there.
But I did.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so and this is what I read on Wikipedia. Thank God for Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's a story of five people who get, shipwrecked on an uncharted island, and it's a mysterious island, and that's the gist of it. So it is kind of Lost-ish, and it also could be a parallel story about these people together on some place that's mysterious, which is Storybrooke certainly is. They're lost in Storybrooke, which is the same as being in an uncharted desert island for them.
Isolated from the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
They can't leave.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. It's almost like an island in space, geographically. No one can enter, no one can leave. Except for the writer, except for the one who created. Huh. Who creates the story. He can come in and go out.
Hmm.
What does that make Emma? Because Emma also was able to leave Storybrooke.
Oh, but we haven't seen her leave Storybrooke.
She hasn't left.
That's true.
That's what I was gonna ask.
True. She tries. She could enter, but she can't leave anymore. Perhaps she could enter Storybrooke because she belongs there ultimately. She's part of this. She was supposed to be there.
And what about the stranger? What if he's like Emma can leave, or he comes in but he never leaves? Like, what if Emma was like a sounding call for all of these other lost Storybrooke characters who somehow ended up outside of Storybrooke, but now are being kind of beckoned home?
Could be, because I keep thinking that he is more of a story influencer. And the way that he kind of manipulates the conversation with Emma, you know, keeping her guessing about the box, it's almost like, I'm in control. I know what's coming. I mean, he knows that the storm is coming. He's the only one that kind of gives that weather prediction. So there are some indications that he knows more about the future than the people that are actually in Storybrooke, and perhaps because he actually creates the future by writing it.
Right.
Would be kind of a, what's his name? The a Stephen King kind of motive. I think wasn't there a story, Stephen King story, where a writer is actually writing his own story and what he writes happens, or I don't know.
Oh, there's recently a movie, but that wasn't Stephen King. But I know there's a Stephen King novel. He always writes about writers. But there's recently a movie with Will Ferrell in
movie.
It.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Hmm. And Dustin Hoffman. That's actually one. I don't like Will Ferrell, but that's one of a really good movie.
If I may, I would like to add a little bit more to my Wizard of Oz overall theory. So when Mary Margaret talks with David in the coffee shop, they joke about the vet's, what is it, the clinic for animals. And she asks him, you know, how's it going? And then he says, the apes haven't taken over. And then she says, yet. And then he answers, well, not on my watch. I'm thinking, apes? Wizard of Oz. There are apes in Wizard of Oz, these flying apes.
Oh, flying monkeys.
Or flying monkeys or whatever.
So, I got a totally different reference. I got Planet of the Apes.
No. No talking apes. No, I was thinking Wizard of Oz. And then Mike Kuiper's in the chat room asks, you know, wasn't the aunt in Wizard of Oz called Auntie M? Emma? And then, of course, there are the theories that the stranger is actually, like we speculated last week, Rumpelstiltskin's son. And then Mike also adds the uncle in Wizard of Oz was called Henry. Pum pum pum. Wow. Intriguing.
Well, if your theory holds up, then there's a good witch and a bad witch.
Well, we've certainly seen a bad
witch. No, the bad witch is, but
who is the good witch?
Who's the good witch? Maybe it's Rumpelstiltskin. I think there's good in him. But anyway,
you think he's a cross-dresser?
I think there's some good in him. My other theory. Are you done? I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. But
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
Did you the some other theories I thought about with the stranger is that he could be, and since we see Red for the first time in her storybook or her fairy tale image, we haven't heard about the woodsman who saved Red's life in Little Red Riding Hood. He could be something like that, or he could be another prince. He could be Prince Philip.
Mm-hmm. Did you catch that Snow told Red that she helped her when no one else would?
Oh, that's true. So I wondered,
you know, maybe she helped Red. I mean, I don't know.
Because in the original Red Riding Hood story, you know, the woodsman comes and kills the big bad wolf and saves Red.
Yes, indeed.
So that probably means we're going to get an episode about Red soon.
Well, and the theory another theory is that the stranger is the big bad wolf. You know,
I don't think so.
I've heard that one a lot.
I don't think so. We've not seen any animal characters currently as in a storybook human form, as far as I know.
Chimney Cricket.
Well, but he was a human before. He was just, turned into a cricket. But I don't know.
When I saw them dash into the cabin in the woods,
yes.
And then we went to the restaurant and we saw them talking and he's a writer. And I immediately thought the cabin must be his, that he's really been in Storybrooke.
Oh,
this whole time.
Because there's this question. Yeah. Have you been here before?
Yeah, I agree.
Good point.
Yes, I agree, Lisa. I had the same theory.
Cause that's just what they stumble upon this cabin at the same time he comes into town and he's a writer. And I don't know. You always think of writers like alone in the woods writing. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a writer's cabin. And
okay,
I got
the way you guys have been taught, something just kind of clicked here. Stop me if this sounds off, but I think we're all in agreement that none of us like the way that all of a sudden that the Snow White and Prince just all of a sudden kiss.
Mm-hmm.
But, we've already seen through several episodes here that, you know, every time that there's something even close to a happy ending, Emma's usually part of that. So she helps, you know, when Henry falls down the shaft and, Jiminy helps. A lot of it was largely Jiminy, but, you know, Emma helped through that and Jiminy got to he regained his, he gained the freedom to stand up for himself. And then when Emma helped the kids find their dad, or, I mean, she's, every time she helps somebody do something, there's something of a happy ending, and then crickets come back, or a writer comes into town, or something.
Yes.
And in this case, with David and Blanchard, or whatever you want to call them, that they're kind of coming together on their own, and Emma's not helping yet, and so this is unless Emma actually helps, it's going to go awry. So Emma has to be part of the solution for anything to work, which is why this probably feels very wrong.
Well, but in a way, wasn't she involved? I mean, she's the one who actually pointed the way to the to grandma's, what is it, hotel. So she has helped the writer and...
No, sorry.
Wait a minute. No, it's the writer, yeah. You mean David them. David and Snow and Mary Margaret.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but on the other hand, it could also be more of a general thing that now that Emma is in Storybrooke, happy endings start to occur. And you could tell by the looks on the face of Regina that she is not happy with that, because it means that the story is out of control, or Storybrooke is out of control, and she's no longer really manipulating every single aspect of the town. Because love is more powerful than any magic that she might possess. So, you know, I think that for most viewers, the ending was probably seen as a happy ending, not as a moral defeat or as like, oh, finally they kiss. Come on. You know, people yelling at their TV screen. That's what we all want, you know.
Leave it to a whole bunch of Catholics to come up with this.
But I think what I liked about the whole way in which they portrayed the romance is that both characters realize that they can't engage in this relationship, because they have commitments, and they try what they can to stay apart. And I thought it was actually good writing and interesting as a theme that you know, you've got your feelings, but then you've also got something. It's like what Thomas Aquinas calls a passion of the heart. You know, you've got different sorts of passions, and love is a very strong effect of you know, your passion. You also have your mind. You also have reason, and the two should work hand in hand. If reason works without the heart, it gets out of control and it becomes sterile and tough and impersonal. And on the other hand, if love functions without reason, it usually leads to catastrophes as well. And so you saw this. I thought it was really great to see this tension, this conflict almost between passion and reason, between morality and then, you know, love. And I thought, as a theme, I didn't expect that in a very popular, you know, primetime TV show, but very recognizable. And so I think that the point that the story tried to make is that despite everything that works against it, the given situation, because let's say even from a legal point of view, let's not forget that Snow White and Prince Charming are married. There was a bishop standing there. I mean, that's some pretty firm, you know, confirmation of this is a valid marriage. And then we don't know, actually, and it's always been my beef with that relationship between David and Abigail, or no, she's not called Abigail in the real world, but
Catherine
was like, who tells me that they're really married? This might all be a fabrication. And when he says to Snow, you know, I've got memories of feelings for Catherine, but I have real feelings for you. I was like, you might be right. You know, it's like in The Matrix. It's all been downloaded in your head, but it never happened. It's not really there. You know?
Well, and I think Snow puts it very good, is you can't have, you know, you can love two people at the same time, but you got to choose, because it's not fair to either one of them.
Yeah.
And that was very interesting, very true also. I mean, love is not just a feeling. It's also a choice that you make. And you can have feelings but not act upon them. And
can I,
yeah,
can
go
I
ahead.
Talk about psychology for 1 second?
Sure. You're the expert.
Okay, because I teach this occasionally in my classes, that a lot of social psychologists say that you can actually force yourself to fall in love with someone, and it can become true love if you fake it. If you fake it,
really?
Fake it to make it. Yeah.
Huh.
That if you want to fall in love with someone, you act as if you're in love with them already, and then at some point your brain will get confused and say, yep, this is love.
Does that work with TV series as well? I mean, can no, I say, because, I love Pan Am. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
And it turns of this all-powerful, you know, written in the stars love that people, you know, tend to love in these love stories.
Well, it's certainly true that it's there is this kind of overall sentiment that you should act upon your feelings, and you know that is the ultimate criterion is what do I feel. But of course, that is a simplification of the of reality. And if you look at a lot of marriages, you know, it starts with being madly in love and lots of feelings. But over time, the older people get, the more love becomes not something that is based on feelings, but something that is actually based on the will to love each other. And love itself is redefined and is no longer based on, you know, external beauty or attraction or hormones or whatever. No, that love with older people can sometimes be totally, you know, we want to be together and we have a lot of reasons to not like each other, and yet we're married, so we stay with each other. And that too, you know, again, to quote Thomas Aquinas, I think it's the second time, not that he wrote any fairy tales, but he did write some very good stuff. And he says, you know, love has more to do with will than with emotion. And I think that is true in many cases. And we're actually probably we could potentially get into a lot of trouble and hurt other people if we block out reason and the will and just act upon our emotions and intuition. Mm-hmm. So we have a heart and a brain. We should use both, preferably at the same time.
Well, I thought this episode did a really good job with the theme of love. I mean, it came up in both fairy tale and real world. And you notice they kept talking about love is the most, who is it? Rumpelstiltskin said, love is the most powerful magic.
Yes.
The cure must be extreme. And then the king, what'd you call him, King Jerk?
What did he say?
The same thing. It could only be vanquished by cure or by death.
Yes.
And then, you know, in the real world, they talk about, you know, gotta get him out of my head. You know, they have feelings for you. But you notice, I wrote down at the end of the episode that a kiss in the real world doesn't equal happily ever after.
That's right.
True.
You know, Snow White's story in fairy tale world is a kiss. And it's, you know, you jump from him waking her up with a kiss to them getting married happily ever after.
Yeah.
And the real world, now they've kissed. Well, does that mean happily ever after?
Exactly.
No.
The kiss is the beginning, and then the rest of the life is a hard work often.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And Prince Charming was fighting for honor versus love, it seemed like. He was supposed to marry Abigail and do what was right for the kingdom and right for this king and, you know, versus love and...
Well, and also sacrifice himself for the common good. Mm-hmm. So he put the good of the people that he felt responsible for, of course, being a shepherd originally, he cares for his flock. So he's ready to sacrifice his own love and his own feelings so that, you know, his flock or his people can be happy, which is, I think, a great, great honorable sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. And if you think of it, Snow did the same thing. She sacrificed herself for him.
Well, and it's very interesting that in the story arc of Snow White, or actually Mary Margaret, there's this whole, you know, caring for the flock and reuniting the lost dove, not really the lost sheep, but the dove with the rest of the flock, with the rest of the birds. And it's the same desire for, you know, it's not just the individual that counts. It's also, you know, you can only be happy if you are in the company of the flock. That is true for the dove. It also, in the end, is true for Snow White. It's what the dwarves tell her. It's like, you know, when Grumpy says, I want to feel the pain of having lost my friend because it makes me who I am, and we are your cure. You have our company. And, you know, you can always drink the potion if it hurts too much. And that's presumably what she does. But I thought it was a beautiful theme that it's not just about your individual desires. It's the strength of the community that can actually almost attenuate, compensate for the losing love. And it's something that Rumpelstiltskin doesn't understand. He, with his broken heart, instead of seeking the comfort of a community, he isolates himself. He becomes this you know, evil person that is completely... The only way that he can interact with the community is by manipulating them and by trying to get some gain out of every relationship. And in a way, Regina, same story. She is not able to really be part of the town that she is the mayor of. She is very isolated in her ivory tower. And so people in this story seek like two opposite directions to heal their broken heart. It's fascinating stuff.
Mm-hmm. I actually did broach this question to somebody that I know. I said, if you were Snow, would you drink the potion? I almost said poison. Would you drink the potion? You know, and how, you know, I think that's a very valid question, is would people drink the potion to get rid of this feeling?
Mm-hmm.
So. Hmm.
Yeah. And did she really drink it? I mean, we see the empty bottle and she says, you know, who is that? But is that, did it really happen? I don't know. I'm always suspicious of perhaps something else happened. I don't know.
Shelly's in the chat room, and Shelly said,
oh,
I would.
Okay.
And I told my friend, too, I would drink the potion. I would totally drink the potion. Anyway, I have a whole theory about that, but that's not
the show. Oh, Shelly has an interesting theory.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's up with the hair?
The hair, just, me yeah. too, yeah.
I have something about that, but go ahead.
Okay.
Talk about it. And well, then I want to tell you what I think happened.
Here's what Shelly writes in the chat room. Shelly thinks she really drank the potion, and I bet that is why Rumpel wanted her hair to use in a counter potion.
Mm.
Ooh, I like that theory.
That way the prince would probably have to barter something for Rumpelstiltskin to get the potion, so he'd owed him a favor or something.
Or yeah, Prince Charming might see Rumpel and get
can
a
I,
cure.
Can I say
yeah, go ahead.
The hair. Okay, because
the hair.
In a former life, I used to wash people's hands. That was part of my job.
Really?
And so during this...
Not like predicting the future, watching other people's
like,
hands,
like,
I hope.
Okay, I used to do retail theft. Like, not okay. steal myself, but, you know, watch people steal. And you have to keep a hand, your eye on their hands to see what they're doing. And for Rumpel, I did. I kept my... I'm like, what's he doing with that hair?
Oh.
And you know what he did with that hair, from what I could see? He threw it away.
That's what I thought he did, too.
Really?
He dropped it. When he turned around, he raised up the hand with the hair in it, and he did this whole motion where it's kind of like where you'd get the hair off your hand.
Why?
But, you know, someone just posted on the chat thing. It says, again, reminds us, magic always has a price. And that's true. What is the price here? And he doesn't really...
I had a different take on this whole thing. I thought that the hair actually this whole encounter with Rumpelstiltskin has a number of potential symbols in it. First of all, the meeting takes place near the water, and it's night. Two symbols of death. Water, especially deeper water, has always been a threat. It's dangerous, and darkness also is, you know, the absence of light. Blah blah blah. It's all, you know, death looming again. Her future looks dark. And then he is sitting in the boat. I'm perhaps a little bit over analyzing this, but I'm thinking I get reminiscences of biblical stories where Jesus actually sits in the boat. As someone who, you know, controls the water. He's a master of death. He can, you know, and that's what a boat does. It actually prevents you from drowning. So it's a symbol of something that saves your life, literally. And then he wants to buy the boat from her. He's like, he wants to procure it, almost taking her away, her future, her safety, her life, perhaps. And then the boat is also something that brings you to the other side. So it's also a symbol of something that will bring you to your future. And so with taking the boat or trying to buy the boat, his intention seems to be, you know, I want to take away your future. That's the price that I'm gonna ask from you. She just wants to forget. He insists that the hair is necessary to personalize the potion, but he wants it as payment. Now, that can mean two things. The hair can be a reference to the power, the almost a magical power of hair, as we see in some mythological stories and also in an Old Testament story. And I think I already mentioned this in a previous episode, the story of Samson, this giant that is super strong because he's got a lot of hair. And the moment they cut his hair, he loses his power. And in a way, even in modern advertisements, hair is still used as a symbol of youth and power and strength. You know, you just don't believe the market there is for anti-hair loss stuff. You know, it's like it's a symbol of virility. And so could this hair be kind of, again, a symbol of him taking away her life, her energy, her strength? Or is the payment actually the fact that she's going to drink that, and she's going to lose the love of her life. And so I don't know. I'm thinking perhaps the payment is some kind of meta payment because of the impact that this potion is going to have on her life. And then in that perspective, it might make sense that he just throws away the hair because it doesn't matter. His payment is much bigger than much more important than the hair.
Can I bring a flash forward to the first scene of the very first pilot episode of?
Yeah.
Okay, so you see in the first scene, you know, Snow in her coffin, and she's dead, or she's asleep because she ate the apple, right? Which is another spell. And so, and you see Prince Charming kissing her. Well, could it be possible that the spell of the potion is broken by the spell of the apple? Because it's like one spell cancels out the other. And then when the third spell of Prince James kissing her actually breaks all the other spells.
Spell mathematic.
Yeah, sorry.
I do think that there is a hierarchy in magical powers. I mean, we hear it literally from the mouth of Rumpelstiltskin, and that is love is the supreme power in the universe, or the supreme magic. Very similar, by the way, to the Harry Potter hierarchy of magical powers. I mean, love is ultimately what breaks the spells of the bad guy Voldemort, and love is always designated as the true magic, or the ancient magic, that the magic that made everything else possible, and it can't be vanquished. It can never be, you know, evil can never win from love.
And that's what made me wonder when he said love is most powerful magic, and yet he's giving her a potion that's supposed to cure love or get rid of it. And I thought, can he really do that?
Well, and I had another theory about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just the feelings for Prince Charming and or James,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, what if there's another prince and she falls in love with that one? It won't vanquish those feelings. I know. And it goes against that contrary that there's only one true love out there and blah, blah, blah. But, you know.
I wonder if
Shelley
there's time.
Shelley just said not pure love. It made her forget the love.
Yes.
Well, he also didn't say how permanent it was. So
yes.
We don't know. Maybe she'll forget him until she sees him again. I don't know.
And that's my other thought, too.
I assume that this takes place in the time frame before the wedding. So at one point, this situation must be reversed, right?
Right.
Because they marry, and they know each other, and they recognize each other, and so.
And that's my theory about the mathematics of you know, this potion. That, and she might have a form of what we call retrograde amnesia, which is she forgets everything prior to meeting him again, and then she is able to build on new memories of this chemistry or this love.
I think that there's going to be a counter curse, and it might have to do with that hair. I think I'm feeling more and more that Shelley is right with her theory that the hair will be necessary for a counter cure, and that too will have a price. And perhaps that's what Rumpelstiltskin already can feel, that there might be a future bargain that is going to give him more than just that hair. Because love cannot be nullified, cannot be destroyed. So perhaps he knows that the cure is only going to be a temporary cure. And the end of the story in Storybrooke seems to indicate that no matter what you do, ultimately love is stronger than, you know, anything else.
Huh. Did you love the scene where they're telling her about the dove at the pet shelter, and they talk about how if they have to, you know, they mate for life or whatever, they go with their flock.
And they're monogamous. Says, yeah.
So he'll be lost. She'll be lost forever, completely alone. And then she says, no one deserves that. And that look on her face as she said those words, you know, you thought that's exactly how she's feeling.
Exactly.
Right now.
And then, you know, the dove will heal, but will never be happy.
Never be happy.
And it's like, wow, this is just talking about Snow White. It's talking about Mary Margaret. But the acting was fantastic in those scenes.
Oh, did you realize that wasn't a mistake, in fact?
No.
That's not a dove. That's a pigeon.
Oh, a pigeon? Really?
Yeah.
What's the difference? I've always wondered what the difference was.
But no, that's a pigeon. It's a messenger pigeon, and it's just they're passing it off as a dove, which doesn't actually, a messenger dove does not exist. Well, it doesn't exist in,
Perhaps it was a magic one.
But somebody, I saw this on a board, somebody who's like a bird fanatic said that type of bird does not exist. but I found it funny because, it's a pigeon. But,
well, you know.
But we like the symbolism of a dove. It works better,
of
right?
Of course.
Yes,
it's a fairy tale dove. I mean, right. The dove literally flew from the fairy tale world and got lost in the real world.
Yeah,
who would have, you know, created that? Was that a net used to catch the dove or the pigeon?
Some sort of net.
Or was it just, you know, kind of random clutter?
I mean, it could have been garbage, but it was not on the side of the road. It was way down.
Well, I was thinking back of the scene where we saw Rumpelstiltskin messing around among the trees. I was like, is he hunting for doves?
was it around that area?
Yeah. Probably not. I don't know.
You notice how we're getting more and more in the fairy tale world. More and more things are overlapping.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they're characters. And Shelley was telling me earlier this week that we need to have a timeline, you know, of who knows what, when something happened,
indeed,
and this and that. And I saw someone was saying how, like, maybe it was Shelley. The stranger couldn't be Gold's son because of the timeline, and I'm thinking, I don't know. And she was saying
young.
How long Rumpelstiltskin's been evil.
Mm-hmm.
She said since Geppetto was a boy. Was that Geppetto?
Yes.
He was a boy.
Yeah, it was true.
Geppetto, yep. Yeah,
because Jiminy Cricket ran into Geppetto as a boy.
True.
Right. And so if you do it that way, his son was 14 when that happened, so his son would be old.
Yeah,
I mean, older
right.
than Geppetto.
You're right. It could be his son. Could be his grandson.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But of course, going back to the writer, I did think when I got the typewriter, I know this, it couldn't be true because it would be too obvious that he would be the one who wrote the book. But they wouldn't do something. So,
well, the typewriter is a very strong symbol of, storytelling. And we know that stories, that's the essence of this whole series. It's all about the power of stories. And stories... Mm-hmm. You know, giving future, giving hope to people. And so is this a bad guy? Is this a good guy? If he writes stories, he's probably a good guy. He's probably going to bring even more hope. Or not. I don't know. But Regina seems to be concerned about him. She doesn't like this. She's getting out of control. Because if new stories get to be told, again, it just means that she is no longer the person controlling everything.
Well, and if he really is a stranger, she's got to know there's never been strangers there. And that's really got to worry her, because what's happening either to her power or the town? I mean, things are, ever since Emma came, things have been kind of out of whack for her. And what does the stranger now mean?
Yeah. Hey, we were talking about the timeline. Princess Samantha Rose, that's a nickname of someone in the chat room, or it could be a real princess, who knows, posted a link to actually a timeline that was done by Once Upon a Time fans, or Oncers, as they're also called nowadays. It's onceuponatimefans.co.uk/timeline.htm. And it actually gives you a timeline and a narrative. This is pretty cool, with photos and everything. And it shows you, from the flashbacks, what took place at what time. And I assume that this will be updated with new episodes. So this is a very good thing to bookmark as a reference. The Ogre Wars. When is that going to be? That's going to be. Are we going to see the Ogre Wars? I want
to
see.
We've had how many references to those? We've had quite a few, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah. Still haven't seen the ogres.
The same as the Clone Wars.
Could be. Yeah, the Ogre Wars.
Well, I think
it's going to be a spin-off animated series called the Ogre Wars.
We've got Beauty and the Beast in 2 weeks or 2 episodes from now. It looks like.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Those pictures are all I think I sent y'all a link. Those pictures are all over the internet.
Oh, cool.
So it looks it's going to happen about the same time as Valentine's Day. Because from the pictures, it looks like it's Valentine's Day on the show.
And the same Princess Samantha Rose also said that it was a tweet from one of the actors talking about filming stuff in a scuba tank. So underwater. So that could be a reference to we all hope to see the Ariel story.
Mm-hmm. I've heard rumors about that.
So interesting. Or it could just be someone drowning while trying to escape. Storybrooke.
They find out their identity and poof, they're gone.
Yes.
There's just another big sinkhole opens, only this time it's water.
I want to take a short break and then talk about a few of the details that people might have noticed or might have not noticed. But before I do that, I want to briefly mention our sponsors. Bluehost, which is a great hosting company with unlimited storage space, a .com domain name, and one-click installation of, for instance, WordPress. A lot of bloggers use WordPress. Most bloggers use WordPress. But if you're not technical, it can be very difficult to get your blog going. Well, with WordPress, for just $6.95 per month, you get and a .com domain name and unlimited storage space and bandwidth, and you get this one-click installation. So I use it myself. I love it. That's why I recommend it. We're also we have an affiliation with the Amazon store. So whenever you buy something on Amazon, let's say a new fairy tale book or something, or a boat, or I don't know, some magic potion, you can if you click on our Amazon link, we've got a little icon on the onceuponatime.sqpn.com. Amazon will actually share a bit of their revenue with SQPN, and so that keeps us going, pays for the bandwidth. And then ultimately, this show is also sponsored by the listeners. We are a nonprofit organization, and we have a lot of what we call the friends of SQPN. So the people that like our shows, really enjoy it, want to help us in our quest to produce all these different shows and reach more bigger and bigger audiences. And you can join those friends of SQPN if you like this show by signing up for a monthly donation. Like if you drink a lot of coffee at Starbucks, you know, you could benefit your health and benefit SQPN by, you know, saving up a bit of those, you know, not going to Starbucks twice every month and then instead becoming a friend of SQPN, a monthly sponsor, or a one-time donation. It's all welcome. Every little bit helps. So go to sqpn.com for more information. And let's go to the details.
Grass.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
Memorable details. I like all these little sounds that Rumpelstiltskin make. I don't know. Some monkey in there. A few notes that I took while watching, of course, the license plate, you know, HR23, still don't know what that means, Kansas. I'm not even sure that the license plate actually says that because it's kind of a blurry shot. But perhaps our listeners caught it. Well, we talked about the Jules Verne book about the island. That's very cool. The apes reference, I thought that was a very interesting detail. Actually, this is not really a detail, but something that we forgot to mention with the encounter between Snow White and Rumpelstiltskin. Little Red Riding Hood tells Snow that there is this man, and he is able to fulfill even the most unholy of requests. And then it turns out that he is actually able to negate love, or, you know, let someone forget about love. And that is the equivalent in this logic of the most unholy of requests. It's like negating love, trying to suppress it. It is literally kind of destroying love. And I like the qualification of that being something unholy, because love is the holiest thing that there is. And then it's Rumpelstiltskin in his current evil situation is kind of an archetype of the devil or Satan. And what the devil wants is to destroy love and make people forget about love and forget about the source of love. And so really like that idea.
But can I interject something here? And Shelley pointed this out, and I noticed it too. He can't make other people fall in love with you, which is kind of an Aladdin kind of thing. There are rules to this. So
Aladdin, but also, you know, the biblical notion of love is love. It can only exist when there's freedom, and you can't take away someone's freedom because it's given by God. And so the only way in which we can destroy love is by actually choosing, making it's a personal choice. If you turn away from someone you love, that is what's going to destroy it. But no one can't make you do that. So Rumpelstiltskin has no power over love because love is actually stronger than he is. He can just try to make people forget about it. Just like the snake in the Garden of Eden cannot really destroy God. He can only help people forget about God or run away from God or hide from God. But he cannot destroy God. He wish he could, but he can't. So ultimately, love is always stronger than any evil in the world and in the fairy tale world. I like that. Supermarket details. Always interesting when they go for shopping. That's a freeze frame moment. Regina is, at first, when she observes the encounter between Abigail and Snow, she carries a magazine in her hand, and if you freeze frame it, you see that on the back of the magazine, there's actually a big brown carpet, and there's a guy on the carpet lying on his back, almost as if he's dead. And I was like, oh, a dead man on a carpet. That kind of fits her intentions quite well. And then, just a few seconds later, she turns the magazine around. It turns out it's a Fantastic Four comic book.
Oh, Marvel.
Marvel, yes, but there's more to this. This is the first time that we actually notice that Regina is buying these magazines for Henry. I'm thinking, could the reason be that we see... Because I was always puzzled, why is Henry always reading comic books? Could it be that Regina is afraid of the power of those fairy tales, doesn't like her son reading fairy tales, and therefore feeds him with these Marvel stories instead? So it's actually kind of a counter cure. And so, you know, read these Marvel stories, read these comic books instead of really reading real fairy tales.
Because in the Hulk comic books, there are like no happy endings.
Well, yes, the Hulk is very depressing. Yes, well, they're kind of.
And it's corporate too.
That is true. Absolutely, it's Disney property. But but I think, you know, it could be. I think it would be a nice detail if she buys these comic books just to dissuade her son from reading this darn fairy tale book that gives him these weird ideas about her, you know, being such an evil person.
You guys catch the detail about the. The candy bar that Margaret picked up. Yeah, I'm not the biggest lost person, but
it's the famous Apollo bar. Yeah,
almost. Okay, was that not a big candy bar?
Yeah, it's almost. There's almost in every episode. There's an Apollo bar. It's really.
We took up her whole basket.
Yeah, well, chocolate cures heartbroken people, isn't that? A lot of people see chocolate as the perfect cure against broken hearts.
Right. It was either going to be chocolate or a big thing of ice cream.
I didn't understand the torchlight that she buys and all the batteries. It's like, what is that
about?
Well,
because the storm's coming.
Oh,
of
course.
That's what you do. You buy batteries. And,
yeah, you live in a stormy area, so you know that. I was like, what is that for?
Everyone always talks about batteries, flashlights, water. Yeah.
So chocolate and light, the two basic necessities of life, at least for women.
Yes.
Very good. Interesting name, of course. And I wasn't sure if we talked about this before, but we hear that the name of the princess Prince Charming is supposed to marry is Abigail. I think that was revealed, but I never really made the connection with Prince Charming, because Prince Charming's name in Storybrooke is David. And I'm thinking, that is a biblical story. Do you know that story about David, King David, and well, he wasn't king at the time, And Abigail?
No.
Okay, well, here it is. It's from the first book of Samuel, chapter 25, if you want to know. It tells the story of a wealthy man, Nabal, who owns lots of sheep and goats and everything. He lives near the Mount Carmel. He was a very kind of nasty guy, married to Abigail, very pretty, very wise woman. And then one day, the servants of Nabal, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, were shearing wool of the sheep. And then David approaches them saying, you know, you've heard stories about me that we've been stealing and hurting other people. Well, it wasn't me, you know, I didn't do that. And, you know, just share with us some of the food that that you've cooked. So he asks for a bit of their food. And then they go to Nabal to talk with him. And Nabal is like irate. He's like, who does this David think he is? He's just a slave, you know. I'm not going to share my food and water with him. I'm not even sure that you guys are really, you know, part of David's entourage. And then, you know, they get back to David. David gets mad and he's like, you know, let's attack. And they want to they march towards Nabal to kill him. And then Abigail, or actually one of the servants tells Abigail, you know, David is actually, he's been very good for us and he would never hurt us or steal from us. So, you know, actually they would provide safety to us. And so Abigail wants to appease David, who is like planning to kill her husband. And so she puts lots of bread and wine and meat and grain and raisins and everything on a donkey. She and carries the food to David. And so they meet. She tries to appease him. She's like, you know, God doesn't want you to do evil things. I want to keep, you know, you have to stay good. And here are these goods. She didn't tell her husband, by the way. And turns out that Nabal, in the meantime, was pretty drunk. So at first, Abigail doesn't tell him that that she took his food or his, you know, his meat and everything to feed David and his man. However, the next day he's sober again, and then she tells him everything, and he gets a heart attack and dies. and then she marries David. I was like, interesting. David and Abigail, two biblical figures. Who would have known?
But so, your theory that Abigail is the princess from Princess and the Pea?
That's what I thought.
Right.
Now I'm thinking, well, they might actually have taken their inspiration from this biblical story. Because we know for sure that David was a shepherd. I mean, we see this. And, you know, now he's about to become king, so that's clearly a reference to David. But with the name Abigail, it kind of totally falls into place. But it could be a mix. Could be a mix. I don't know. Anyway, that was a little bit of background story from Abigail and David. It must be on purpose. By the way, I'm reading this from a website, from a children's Bible website. So if some people are listening to this and they're like, that's not how the story goes, you know, blame free-stories.net because that's where I got it.
I like never,
the,
yeah.
The real story takes about 5 hours to read. So
explain.
Some more details. Well, we talked about the pigeon. The road is closed at one point, and with the storm, two symbols of, you know, a future that is closed and the, you know, menace for the future. And then in the fairy tale world, we see the prison gate is also a symbol of your future literally being blocked. Then we get the encounter, which I loved, between Snow White and Grumpy. And how does Grumpy get her attention? By whistling, "Hi-ho." Did you notice that?
Yes, I did.
It was brilliant. And then you get the whole backstory that he worked in the diamond mines, actually, to get the stone for the person that he loved. Who was almost like a fairy. It's just wonderful. And then Stealthy, who gets some free. Well, you know,
Stealthy's not all that stealthy.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I'm thinking, stealthy. Did I hear that right? I kept rewinding it. I thought.
Yeah, I was like, who is that?
I'm not up on my dwarfs, but I don't think he was a dwarf.
And then he's killed. And then, you know, the dwarfs tell Snow White, well, we lost someone too, and now we're only seven. Like, that is the most brilliant writing of the episode. Fantastic. Okay.
But did the guy who played Stealthy look really familiar to y'all?
Yeah, he looked like the guy from Lost.
That's what I was thinking. One that was the band guy, the guitar.
Yes, I thought it was a cameo.
He was painting on his knuckles or writing on him.
I thought, and he also plays one of the hobbits in Lord of the Rings. I thought it was a cameo, and then I looked it up, and it's not him. It's a different actor who just looks a lot like him.
Oh, wow.
He's actually played by Jeff Gustafson, Stealthy, at least according to
I just see that right now. He's Canadian, IMDb. And yeah.
But he,
that's funny because I thought the same thing.
And when you look at his picture on IMDb, he doesn't look anything like, what's his name from Lost? But
I guess it was with the big ears and the shaggy hair.
And the nose or something like that. Those are fake ears.
Well, and what's funny is on this, because this is a Vancouver show, filmed up there in Canada, like so many, you see a lot. If you watch, I just happen to watch a lot of shows that are filmed in Vancouver, just randomly, and you see a lot of the same people overlap.
Really? Actors?
I mean, actors. Oh, let's see. I'm trying to think of all of them. I mean, Stargates. All the Stargates were filmed up there. Battlestar Galactica was filmed up there. Eureka. Warehouse 13. So all your sci-fi shows.
And then a bunch Smallville? Of Smallville was also done in somewhere in Canada.
Who was?
Smallville.
Smallville.
Smallville, yeah. Men
in Kansas
Trees.
Looked a lot like Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of this overlap where Abigail, who plays Abigail and Catherine, she was on Royal Pains, which is USA, which I don't know if it's filmed up there or not. But then this new stranger was on Covert Affairs, which is on USA. There's a lot of overlap with a bunch of these characters, and it's kind of funny watching it because you kind of go, oh, I know that guy.
Interesting. Yeah, that's where I need to have my iPad near me when I watch any TV series nowadays to just look things up on IMDb. It's like, I know this actor, but what? Right. Oh, of course, he was in that show, and then he was in that show as well.
Yeah.
Did he? Oh.
Well, like the one that was on the horse.
Yeah.
What was this last with the Rumpelstiltskin episode, you know, where he made him kiss his boots?
Oh, yeah, Kiss My Boot.
I looked him up. I think he's been on like 4 shows that I've watched.
Really?
Hey, he looks familiar.
speaking of cameos and familiar characters, there was this fantastic little detail here in the beginning of the episode, and I just was like, wow. There is, you know, when we switch to the apartment of Snow White and Emma, there's the radio, and we see a little television showing the upcoming storm, and then you hear a weatherman on the radio. And I was like, that's got to be, you know, a joke. Because I've never heard a radio or a person on the radio, so that's a perfect spot for a cameo. Turns out that the guy, the voice of the the weather guy? The weather guy, dude, meteorologist, is actually Damon Lindelof, who is one of the main writers of Lost. He was also one of the main writers for Star Trek, the two Star Trek movies. And Damon Lindelof is a great, great guy and totally the type of guy who would do that. And so I thought it was a brilliant detail. I think it's his first cameo here, or his first cameo altogether, because I don't think he's ever been in, you know, doing any cameos for other shows as well. He's one of the guys that worked a lot with J.J. Abrams. And then, of course, this whole secret box and what's in the box, that is a direct reference to a very famous talk that J.J. Abrams gave, I think, for TED. TED is this kind of network, and you can actually look it up on the web. They've got great videos, great inspirational talks from, you know, industry leaders and creative people, artists, whatnot. And J.J. Abrams once told this whole story about, you know, how to tell stories that people keep people glued to their television screen. And he said, you know, there's this box of Pandora, and you just put a box in the story, and you don't say what's in it. And you keep people guessing. And as long as you don't reveal what's in the box, people will be intrigued. They will keep watching because they want to know what's in the box. And once they know what's in the box, story's over. So you don't reveal it. And he actually explains that that is the way that they did Lost. The island is actually a box. You don't really know what's in it. They give you hints, they keep you guessing, but, you know, they only reveal it at the very end. And even then, there is part of the mystery that remains. And so it was clearly, and the way that he gives this talk is almost similar, it's almost identical to the actual lines here in the dialogue between Emma and the writer, this mysterious writer. So I thought it was a great nod. And you know, Damon Lindelof is a huge admirer of J.J. Abrams. And actually, they're very much akin, I think, in their storytelling. Fringe, another J.J. Abrams show. Same thing. You know, it's all about the mystery. What's really going on? You don't really know. There's this secret box. So I was shocked that they actually opened the box and showed a typewriter. And then I'm thinking the typewriter could be the box within the box. Because what's the typewriter about? It's not just a typewriter. A typewriter makes stories. What do the stories do? You know,
somebody had this really crazy theory about the typewriter online, and they're like, it's holding the dagger for Rumpelstiltskin, and I'm like, what?
No.
You know, because we talked so much last time about the dagger. Yes, and, oh, it's going to be, you know, something dagger. It's going to be, you know, and then he opens it. It's a typewriter. I kind of went, really?
Whap, whap, whap.
And then anybody who's under the age of 20 is going, what's a typewriter?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, that typewriter looks really old.
This is what iPads look like in my youth.
Where do you plug it in?
Yeah, where's...
It's
crazy. Hey, we've come to the end of our show. We need to wrap this up. I'm sure that we could talk for another hour, but I don't want to test the patience of our listeners too much. If you have any theories or corrections or additional information or speculation about the show, don't hesitate to send us an email. onceuponatime@sqpn.com. Or even easier, let us know via Twitter or Facebook. Look us up on Facebook, Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and on Twitter, it is actually Once Upon a Time PC. Once Upon a Time Podcast. PC stands for podcast. But the title of this show is Secrets of Once Upon a Time. There are a couple of other great Once Upon a Time podcasts out there, among which the official, well, not the official, it's an unofficial podcast called Once Upon a Time Podcast. So check those out as well. I always do that. I love listening to old podcasts about my favorite show. And so support them as well. Let's encourage the podosphere around this show, because it's vital, I think, for the success of Once Upon a Time, future seasons. The fans carry the show, because if we weren't fans, then nobody would watch and they wouldn't make any money. And then, you know, it would go the way of the dodo or the way of Pan Am. We, by the way, have a show about Pan Am, in case you still love that. And we have a pilot, a flight attendant, and a few passengers that talk weekly about Pan Am or what's left of it. You can find that at panam.sqpn.com. You can find most of us on Twitter and Facebook. I'll include links in the show notes. And you can find those show notes and our articles about the show and our podcast episodes on onceuponatime.sqpn.com. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we are in the middle of our giving campaign, so if you want to support us, if you like this show and you want to encourage us and help us actually make even more shows, then you can become a friend of SQPN, support us with a monthly donation or a one-time gift or just your prayers or feedback. You know, any encouragement is welcome. We do this for you. We can't do this without you, so... We would appreciate your help and your support. Thank you for listening to this episode, and we will see each other soon for another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.